Dear Lord Baby Jesus, or as our brothers to the south call you, Jesus, we thank you so much for this bountiful harvest of Domino's, KFC, and the always delicious Taco Bell. When you say grace, you can say it to grown-up Jesus, or teenage Jesus, or bearded Jesus, or whoever you want.
The U.S. space shuttle Endeavour has set off on its last mission, blasting off from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Its task is to transport a $2 billion particle detector to the International Space Station. This, it's hoped, will allow scientists to unlock some of the mysteries of the universe by allowing them to study cosmic rays for signs of dark matter and antimatter. NASA has decided to retire its three shuttles because of the high cost of operating them. In the immediate future, Russian and European shuttles will keep the space station stocked with food, water, and supplies.
Go from aim and start. 8, 7, 6, 4, 3, 2, 0, and liftoff.
Since I've been calling, I haven't written a lyric. I mean, why should I when I can call upon spirits with rhythms and flows that dance like Africans who slaved on rubber plantations in the Belgian Congo, whose souls blaze more brilliant than Leopold's, and even tonight as new graves grow cold and chlorofluorocarbons warm up the globe, they live like that deep-ass John Carpenter flick. I mean, can we agree that the Orisha still permeates Santeria? Can we agree that Vordone has made itself at home in the Catholic Church? And if so, then when you see me amongst the leaves, don't think that I'm praying to the trees. I am praying through the trees, just like this poetry is now playing through me. I am a vessel, but unlike the good ship Jesus, I float in a direction in which the actual Son of Man teaches. See, death is like a prison full of souls that had to surrender. But the inmates can do things for you on the outside if you help to propagate their agenda. And tree roots, constellations, rivers, and streams, these are the evidence of things not seen. Think the Haitian Revolution was just Toussaint and Dessalines? No, no, that was the evidence of things not seen. They say superstition is the name that the ignorant give to their ignorance. And there must be a lot of superstition going around because cash has a spiritual significance with pyramids and acacia trees and signs and symbols of deities taken from our Kibbalah libraries and now permanently stored in the Vatican. And who am I? I be your operator, patching you into the infinite. If sex was death, we would be infinite, yet never reaching a climax, counting millenniums like days, intertwining my destiny with the stars like runaway slaves. You can trace my existence through drawings on caves, yet we submit to the same God. My job's to make you conscious of your subconscious, bring you to a new transdance every time your mind gets aligned with parallel galaxies that the Pharisees could barely see. Prepare to be taken to your ultimate destiny, where your test will be to call me.
Due to some violent content, parental discretion is advised. Bye.
Tonight, a major News Channel 5 investigation raises serious questions about Tennessee's war on drugs.
Among those questions, are some police agencies more concerned about making money off the drugs than stopping them?
Well, at the center of this months-long investigation are laws that let officers pull you over looking for cash. And get this, they don't even have to charge you with a crime to keep your money.
As News Channel 5 Chief Investigative Reporter Phil Williams discovered, those kinds of stops are now happening almost every day in Middle Tennessee.
What you are about to see is how police agencies across Tennessee make money. A tractor-trailer stop for a traffic violation leads to a search and the discovery of large blocks containing almost $200,000 cash. Cash that officers keep on the suspicion that it's drug money.
What's wrong with having a large amount of cash?
Corwin Petrosian refuses to admit that there's anything suspicious about the stash that police discovered in the truck he owns. Officers later released his father, who is driving, without filing a single charge. And authorities cut a deal that let Petrosian come to Tennessee to get his big rig back.
If I am a criminal, if they allege me to be a criminal, why would they settle? They do not just let criminals go.
In general, it was seized because, based on our evidence and probable cause, it's illegal drug proceeds.
Still, DA Kim Helper admits what makes the Petrosian case a bit unusual is the location. The traffic stop occurred here in Smith County near the Carthage exit, but the officers work for Helper's 21st Judicial District Drug Task Force out of Franklin, more than an hour away. Her officers patrol that area under a deal where they give a cut cut of any cash they seize to the agency that owns that stretch of road.
It's a way to make money for your task force. Honestly?
Well, you know, when you say make money, I guess it is a way for us to continue to fund our operations.
This is a nation that obeyeth not the voice of the Lord their God.
This is a clip from an advert filmed by an American Christian organization called Family Radio. They're really pushing the idea at the moment that this Saturday, the world's going to end.
God has commanded us to warn them that the sword is coming.
This man is behind the campaign. Howard Camping reckons he's deciphered the Bible and is convinced the apocalypse is on the way.
On May 21, there's going to be a terrific earthquake, way, way greater than anything that the earth has ever experienced, and that'll be the beginning of Judgment Day. The rest of the world will know instantly that Judgment Day has begun because all the earthquake sensors will pick that up instantly, and they will be able, until it comes to 6 p.m. May 21 in their city, they will be able to witness what has happened there.
It looks like he's spent a lot of money trying to persuade people the world's going to end this weekend too. He's sent the Family Radio caravans into Times Square in New York, paid for billboards all over the U.S., and even talked about Judgment Day on his live web show.
It's going to happen. That's why when we bring the warning to the world that Judgment Day is coming, we don't say maybe or high likelihood. We're saying Judgment Day is May 21, 2011, and that's going to happen.
It's not the first time Camping's made an apocalyptic prediction, though. He said the exact same thing would happen in 1994, something he now blames on a miscalculation. But if the world is going to end this weekend, what's he going to be doing on his final days on Earth? He says he's going to watch events unfold on TV and pray for his non-believing family and friends.
The whole world has to know that Judgment Day is near.
Are y'all Gideons?
We are living in a time of history like no other. We are living right at the very end of time. And we are that last generation. People don't want to admit that. People try to suppress that information or ignore that information. But the fact remains that every time that God has brought judgment on the earth, he has always warned the believers. We read, for example, in 1 Thessalonians 5, 1-5, "But of the times and the seasons, brethren, ye have no need that I write unto you. For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. But ye, brethren, are not in darkness, that that day should overtake you as a thief. Ye are all the children of light and the children of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. God is warning and has been warning the entire human race that the rapture of the true believers is going to occur on May 21st, 2011.
The Prince of Peace is back, but he's pissed off. I'm back. I didn't tell you what kind of mood I was coming back in, did I? Y'all, it's Jesus, he's back, but he's pissed. He's yelling something about the cross. I didn't catch it.
According to this formula in 2 Peter 3:8, and I will cause it to rain upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights, and every living substance that I have made will I destroy from off the face of the earth. God here is telling us that in 7,000 years from 4990 BC, minus one, because we're going from there is no year zero, essentially. It lands on May 21st, 2011. And it's precisely the 17th day of the second month. And God is giving us this warning to the whole human race. And many, unfortunately, are not going to heed that warning. They're going to be like the people in Noah's day that just made fun of him and went about their own business, or in the days of Lot, right before the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. But God, in his mercy, is saving a great multitude of people today. And we can take hope that maybe, maybe, I could be one of those that God is saving. We read about the Ninevites in the book of Jonah. And they repented in sackcloth and ashes. But that in itself is not going to save anybody. But what they did is they cried out to God mightily. And their cry was, maybe, maybe God will save me.
Because I know if Jesus were here, he'd probably have an Uzi on him.
Yeah. where he would have a hassle with the human race. Sang hip-hop and don't stop, just blast off, sure shot. Cause the man from Mars stopped eating cars and eating bars, and now he only eats guitars. Yeah!
Christians who kill. We're about out of ideas on this planet, aren't we? So I love people like George Bush or this guy Pat Robertson, this televangelist in the state. These are Christians for stronger nuclear armament. Oh, what a great deal of faith. Because I know if Jesus were here, he'd probably have an Uzi on him. Don't you think he would, Jesus? Yeah, he would. The Prince of Peace is back, but he's pissed off. I'm back. I didn't tell you what kind of mood I was coming back in, did I? Y'all, it's Jesus, he's back, but he's pissed. He's yelling something about the cross. I didn't catch it. Jesus. You know, I don't know what y'all believe, and I don't really care. But you have to admit, beliefs are odd. A lot of Christians wear crosses around their necks. You think when Jesus comes back, he ever wants to see a cross?
Volts of electricity. Burst in the plane.
Putting a seal on the past and building for the future. The words of former Prime Minister John Major, acknowledging the Queen's first trip to the Republic of Ireland. A significant moment, the British monarch invited to Ireland's presidential palace. Current incumbent Mary MacLise welcomed the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh to her residence in Phoenix Park. The Queen's grandfather, King George V, was the last reigning monarch to visit the country in 1911. The palace was then part of the UK, but a century later, much has changed. After signing a visitor's book, the Queen and Duke ventured back outside. Both the Irish tricolour and the Union flag flew above the palace, testament to improved Anglo-Irish relations, underlined by both national anthems being played at the ceremony. A short stroll to the garden saw the Queen plant a tree next to one planted by Queen Victoria, a symbol of the growing relations sought and for a future very different to the troubled past.
The house of pain is in effect, y'all. I say the house of pain is in effect. You know the house of pain is in effect, y'all. And anyone that steps up is getting wrecked.
A new chapter is being written in the long and often painful history between Britain and Ireland as the Queen begins her four-day state visit to the Republic. But despite the ceremony and the intended reconciliation, dissident Republicans opposed to the royal visit have been making their feelings known. Just hours before the Queen arrived, a pipe bomb on board a bus near Dublin was defused. The device was found in a hold-all in the luggage compartment during a check in Maynooth in County Kildare. Her visit is surrounded by intense security with thousands of Irish police and soldiers deployed. There was also tension across the border in Northern Ireland as Republicans in Londonderry torched a bus. Back in Dublin, Irish nationalist protesters scuffled with police as they demonstrated against the visit. The trouble in Ireland follows the security fears in central London on Monday, after dissident Republicans issued a bomb threat for the capital and a controlled explosion was carried out by police. Minute silence in the Garden of Remembrance. The Queen starting her trip to Ireland with a poignant stop in Dublin.
Gandora, Hertage de Von Rhin Elishador, Harrigig, Urum.
Laying a wreath here in remembrance of those who lost their lives fighting for freedom from British rule. The garden was opened to mark the anniversary of the 1916 Easter Rising. Hundreds turned up for the historic event. Dublin's streets full with those looking for a glimpse of the Queen or just going about their daily routine. Some streets playing venue to protests. Dozens of demonstrators clashing with some officers, part of a deployment that will see around 6,000 officers working in support of an unprecedented security operation in the Republic.
ahead of his trip to the UK and Ireland on Monday, Barack Obama has given his thoughts on the killing of bin Laden, the continuing war in Afghanistan, and the Queen. In an interview with Andrew Marr, the American president began by describing the significance of bin Laden's death.
For us to be able to say unequivocally that the mastermind behind that event had been removed was a powerful moment.
Asked about the situation in Afghanistan, Mr. Obama remained positive, but acknowledged that military intervention alone was not going to resolve the conflict.
What we can do, I think, is use the efforts that we've made militarily to broker a political settlement.
He also sent a powerful message of support to the pro-democracy protests sweeping the Arab world.
The United States stands on the side of those who, through nonviolent means, are trying to bring about a better life for themselves and their families.
And he finished the interview by describing the Queen.
What the Queen symbolizes is the best of England.
Him and his wife Michelle will be staying at Buckingham Palace during their 3-day visit to the UK.
Jump around! Jump around! Jump around! Jump up, jump up and get down!
2 weeks after his death, the voice reportedly of Osama bin Laden calling for revolution. Audio released by Al-Qaeda, said to be their late leader. A recording, they say, was made a week before his death, now posted online. A 12-minute message praising the uprisings in Egypt and Tunisia, hoping for revolution in the Arab world.
A delay may cause the opportunity to be lost, and carrying it out before the right time will increase the number of casualties. I think that the winds of change will blow over the entire Muslim world, with permission from Allah. So what are you waiting for? Save yourselves and your children, because the opportunity is here.
Al-Qaeda have voiced their support for the Arab Spring uprisings, hoping it represents an opportunity for leaders who subscribe to radical Islam. The historic events seen in Egypt and Tunisia referred to as inspirational, though this message made no mention of the unrest in Syria, Yemen, or Libya. The recording, translated by a US-based monitoring group, has not been verified as authentic.
Alive and well, apparently. Colonel Gaddafi appears on Libyan television. The dictator makes his first appearance in more than a week. Gaddafi last spotted the day before NATO bombed his Tripoli compound. And no sign that he's prepared to heed Barack Obama's warning that his days in power are numbered.
It's not Obama who decides whether Muammar Gaddafi leaves Libya or not. It's the Libyan people who decide their future.
Libyan government spokesman Moussa Ibrahim telling the U.S. president his word means little here.
Obama is still delusional. He believes the lies that his own government is spreading around the world and his own media is spreading around the world. They have not proved one single charge against us and they refuse to investigate us.
The pressure not just diplomatic. NATO aircraft sinking 8 Libyan warships in overnight attacks on Tripoli, Al-Qums and Sirte. Journalists taken by Libyan officials to see the damage for themselves.
I need someone, a person to talk to, someone who cares, to love. Could it be you? Could it be you? Situation gets rough and I start to panic. It's not enough. It's just a habit, a kid, you're sick. Well, darling, this is it.
You can all just kiss off into the air. Behind my back I can see them stare. They'll hurt me bad, but I won't mind. They'll hurt me bad, they do it all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they do it all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
They do it all the time.
They do it all the time.
They do it all the time.
They
do it all the time.
NATO airstrikes against targets in Libya continue. This week, RAF tornadoes and typhoons destroyed 8 of Colonel Gaddafi's warships. This video was released by the MOD. It's the first time the RAF has bombed warships during the whole Libyan operation. It appears to have been a success. The ships were sunk while docked in ports in Tripoli and other parts of the country. The aircraft also bombed a factory being used by Gaddafi's forces to make fast inflatable boats.
I hope you know that this will go down on your permanent record. Oh yeah? Well, don't get so distressed. Did I happen to mention that I'm in the press?
Buildings go up in flames in Tripoli. Gaddafi's government say that NATO were behind the attacks. They say that the headquarters of the police were hit, as well as the ministry which deals with anti-corruption. Here's Gaddafi's spokesperson, Musa Ibrahim.
The targets were located in a very civilian residential area. So people have been terrorized, families terrorized, children terrorized. Some, of course, minor damage to houses around.
Journalists staying in Libya's capital were taken by their minders to see this blaze.
I take one, 'cause you left me, and two for my family, and three for my heartache, and four for my headaches, and five for my lonely, and six for my sorrow, and seven for no tomorrow, and eight I forget what eight was for, but nine for lost God, ten for everything.
We discussed in depth the principles that I laid out yesterday, the belief that our ultimate goal has to be a secure Israeli state, a Jewish state, living side by side in peace and security with a contiguous, functioning, and effective Palestinian state. Obviously, there are some differences between us in the precise formulations and language, and that's going to happen between friends.
I think for there to be peace, the Palestinians will have to accept some basic realities. The first is that while Israel is prepared to make generous compromises for peace, it cannot go back to the 1967 lines, because these lines are indefensible, because they don't take into account certain changes that have taken place on the ground, demographic changes that have taken place over the last 44 years.
Oh, you can all just kiss off into the air. Behind my back I can see them stare. They'll hurt me bad, but I won't mind. They'll hurt me bad, they do it all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they do it all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they do it all the time.
For 6 months, we have witnessed an extraordinary change taking place in the Middle East and North Africa. Square by square, town by town, country by country, the people have risen up to demand their basic human rights. Two leaders have stepped aside. More may follow. And though these countries may be a great distance from our shores, we know that our own future is bound to this region by the forces of economics and security, by history and by faith. Today I want to talk about this change, the forces that are driving it, and how we can respond in a way that advances our values and strengthens our security. Now, already we've done much to shift our foreign policy following a decade defined by two costly conflicts. After years of war in Iraq, we've removed 100,000 American troops and ended our combat mission there. In Afghanistan, we've broken the Taliban's momentum. And this July, we will begin to bring our troops home and continue a transition to Afghan lead. And after years of war against al-Qaeda and its affiliates, we have dealt al-Qaeda a huge blow by killing its leader, Osama bin Laden. Bin Laden was no martyr. He was a mass murderer who offered a message of hate, an insistence that Muslims had to take up arms against the West and that violence against men, women, and children was the only path to change. He rejected democracy and individual rights for Muslims in favor of violent extremism. His agenda focused on what he could destroy, not what he could build.
Washington State's volcano erupts in a major explosion, and nearby communities are prepared for lava flows which have so far failed to materialize. I'm George Herman reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Mount St. Helens blew up with a bang a little more than 3 hours ago, and there was one report that lava had begun to flow from its crater. But although flash flood warnings are in effect in case of lava or mudslides, none have appeared. The action is all in the sky, as Ron Katzer reports from nearby Cougar, Washington.
Big boiling when it was kind of a dark color. The lightning in it was just atrocious. Just streaking and flashing all over. Kind of pretty in a way. It's still pretty, but we don't know what it's going to do.
The blast, measuring about 5 on the Richter scale, shook a lot of people, some of them out of bed, but no injuries or new damage is reported from the volcano area.
Houston's karma is going to get you. Going to knock you right on the head.
You better get yourself together. Pretty soon you're going to be dead. What in the world are you thinking of? Laughing in the face of love. What on earth you trying to do? It's up to you. Yeah, you. Your sense of karma's going to get you. Going to look you right in the face. Better get yourself together, darling.
Join the human race. How in the world are you gonna see? Laughing at fools like me. Who on earth do you think you are? A superstar? Well, right you are.
The rumble in the jungle. Nicaragua's Tulika volcano spews a huge cloud of gas and ash measuring more than 1 kilometer into the air. The 1,060-meter volcano, which is one of the most active in the country, also generated a series of small earthquakes last week. Authorities looking at evacuating almost 4,000 families living nearby. Volcanic ash falling on fields and roofs in the surrounding farming communities. Not surprisingly, local residents are concerned.
Vemos que son cosas naturales, ¿verdad?
We know they are natural phenomena, But what possibilities would we have to receive a warning so that we are able to get out before we are dragged away? They tell us the Santa Clara Hill is also showing signs of problems.
Scientists have recorded almost 60 seismic shocks in the area since the 9th of May.
Gonna knock you off your feet.
Better recognize your brothers,
everyone you meet. Why in the world are we here? Surely not to live in pain and fear. Why on earth are you there when you're everywhere? Come and get your share.
Iceland's most active volcano has started erupting. Local television and amateur video filmed by passengers on a plane showed a large ash cloud rising from the Grímsvötn volcano, which last erupted in 2004. The volcano, which lies under the uninhabited Vatnajökull glacier in southeast Iceland, has been spewing ash and smoke 12 miles into the air. It comes just over a year after another eruption shut down European air traffic for days, leaving 10 million travellers stranded worldwide. Although a no-fly zone has been imposed for 120 miles in all directions, experts are playing down concerns that it will cause the same level of disruption as before. A spokeswoman for the country's aviation authority says they're monitoring the situation.
The situation now is that all international airports are open and everything is fine. There is no immediate danger and everything is under good surveillance.
Whether widespread disruption occurs again will depend on how long the eruption lasts, how high the ash plume rises, and which way the wind blows.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Pod of whales are in danger of becoming stranded off the Western Isles of Scotland. There's a worry these pilot whales may beach themselves. Around 20 are believed to have severe head injuries. Marine experts have been trying to work out why so many have gathered at this loch off the coast of South Uist.
Very social animals, so when one of their family members is sick or injured, they come ashore to die and they will not leave them. If these animals do strand, which we are, 90% confident it probably is going to happen, just because of the amount of numbers of injuries that we're seeing, it's going to be a monumental task.
Last October, 35 whales risked being stranded in the same place. They did return to sea, but were later found dead off the Irish coast.
Hello? 11 major broadcast and print media corporations represent a major portion of the news information systems, providing multiple links to almost every household in North America. For many people, this means that their entire source of news and information comes through the filters of these 11 corporations. Advertising in the media has been commonly regarded as the voting system weighted by income. The main business of media is to sell audiences to advertisers. Large corporate advertisers rarely sponsor programs that contain serious criticisms of corporate activities, such as negative ecological impacts, the workings of the military-industrial complex, or the continuing corporate support of third-world dictatorships. Media organizations rely heavily upon news provided by corporate and government sources, which have organized divisions to provide this material to the media. These bureaucracies subsidize the media, and the media must be careful not to antagonize such an important investor. The development of right-wing corporate flak producers such as Accuracy Media are used to harass the media and to put pressure upon them to follow the corporate agenda. Flak was developed in the 1970s when major corporations and wealthy right-wingers became increasingly dissatisfied with recent political developments and with media coverage. The ideology of the external threat is integral to the Western political culture. It provides the fuel which makes the propaganda model operate so vigorously. External threats have been ingrained into journalistic practices to the point that even in periods of peace, it is expected for journalists to frame issues in terms of our guys versus the bad guys.
How long then? Asked the student. 30 years, replied the master. But I do not understand, said the disappointed student. At each time that I say I will work harder, you say that it will take me longer. Why do you say that? Replied the master, when you have one eye on the goal, you only have one eye on the path. This is the dilemma that I face within the American public education system. We are so focused on a goal, whether it be passing a test or graduating as first in the class. However, in this way, we do not really learn at our fullest. We do whatever it takes to achieve our original objective. Some of you may be thinking, well, if you pass a test or become valedictorian, didn't you learn something? Well, yes, you learned something, but not all that you could have. Perhaps you only learned how to memorize names, places, and dates to later on forget in order to clear your mind for the next test. School is not all that it can be. Right now, it's a place for most people to determine that their goal out is to get out as soon as possible. I'm now accomplishing that goal. I am graduating. I should look at this as a positive experience, especially being at the top of my class. However, in retrospect, I cannot say that I'm any more intelligent than my peers. I can attest that I am only the best at doing what I'm told. Here I stand, and I'm supposed to be proud that I have completed this period of indoctrination. I will leave in the fall, and I will go on to the next phase expected of me in order to receive a paper document that certifies that I'm capable of work. But I can attest that I'm a human being, not just a worker. I'm a thinker, an adventurer. A worker is someone who is trapped within repetition, a slave of the system set up before him. But now I have successfully shown that I was the best slave. I did what I was told to the extreme. While others sat in class and doodled to later become great artists, I sat in class to take notes, to become a great test taker. While others would come to class without their homework done because they were reading about an interest of theirs, I never missed an assignment. While others were creating music and writing lyrics, I decided to do extra credit, even though I didn't even need it. So I wonder, why did I even want this position? Sure, I earned it, but what will come of it? When I leave educational institutionalism, will I be successful or forever lost? I have no clue about what I want to do with my life. I have no interest because I saw every subject as a study, as work, and I excelled at every subject just for the purpose of excelling and not learning. And quite frankly, I'm very scared. John Taylor Gatto, a retired school teacher and activist critical of compulsory schooling, asserts, "We could encourage the best qualities of youthfulness, curiosity, adventure, resilience, the capacity for surprising insight simply by being more flexible about time, texts, and tests, by introducing kids into truly competent adults, and by giving each student what autonomy he or she needs in order to take a risk every now and then. But we don't do that. Between these cinder block walls, we are all expected to be the same. We are trained to ace every standardized test, and those who deviate and see light through a different lens are worthless to the scheme of public education, and therefore viewed with contempt." H.L. Mencken wrote in the American Mercury for April 1924 that the aim of public education is not to fill the young of this species with knowledge and awaken their intelligence. Nothing could be further from the truth. The aim is simply to reduce as many individuals as possible to the same safe level, to breed and train a standardized citizenry, to put down dissent and originality. That is the aim in the United States. To illustrate this idea, doesn't it perturb you to learn about the idea of critical thinking? Is there really such a thing as uncritically thinking? To think is to process information in order to form an opinion. But if we are not critical when processing this information, are we really thinking? Or are we mindlessly accepting other opinions as truth? This was happening to me, and if it wasn't for the rare occurrence of an avant-garde 10th grade English teacher, Donna Bryan, I would have been doomed. I am now enlightened, but my mind still feels disabled. I must retrain myself and constantly remember how insane this ostensibly sane place really is. And now here I am in a world guided by fear, a world suppressing the uniqueness that lies inside each of us, a world where we can either acquiesce to the inhuman nonsense of corporatism and materialism or insist on change. We are not enlivened by an educational system that clandestinely sets us up for jobs that could be automated, for work that need not be done, for enslavement without fervency for meaningful achievement. We have no choices in life when money is our motivational force. Our motivational force ought to be passion. But this is lost from the moment we step into a system that trains us rather than inspires us. We are more than robotic bookshelves conditioned to blurt out facts we were taught in school. We are all very special. Every human on this planet is very special. So aren't we all deserving of something better? Of using our minds for innovation rather than memorization, for creativity rather than futile activity, for rumination rather than stagnation. We are not here to get a degree to then get a job so we can consume industry-approved placation after placation. There is more and more still. The saddest part is that the majority of students don't have the opportunity to reflect as I did. The majority of students are put through the same brainwashing techniques in order to create a complacent labor force working in the interests of large corporations and secretive government. And worst of all, they are completely unaware of it. I will never be able to turn back these 18 years. I can't run away to another country with a different education system, perhaps meant to enlighten rather than condition. This part of my life is over, and I want to make sure that no other child will have his or her potential suppressed by powers meant to exploit and control. We are human beings. We are thinkers, dreamers, explorers, artists, writers, engineers. We are anything we want to be, but only if we have an educational system that supports us rather than holds us down. A tree can grow, but only if its roots are given a healthy foundation. For those of you out there that must continue to sit in desks and yield to the authoritarian ideologies of instructors, do not be disheartened. You still have the opportunity to stand up, ask questions, be critical, and create your own perspective. Demand a setting that will provide you with intellectual capabilities that allow you to expand your mind instead of directing it. Demand that you be interested in class. Demand that the excuse, "You have to learn this for the test," is not good enough for you. Education is an excellent tool, if used properly, but focus more on learning rather than getting good grades. For those of you that work within the system that I am condemning, I do not mean to insult. I intend to motivate. You have the power to change the incompetencies of the system. I know that you did not become a teacher or an administrator to see your students bored. You cannot accept the authority of the governing bodies that tell you what to teach, how to teach, and that you will be punished if you do not comply. Our potential is at stake. For those of you that are now leaving this establishment, I say, do not forget what went on in these classrooms. Do not abandon those that come after you. We are the new future, and we are not going to let tradition stand. We will break down the walls of corruption to let a garden of knowledge grow throughout America. Once educated properly, we will be cultivated and wise. We will have the power to do anything, and best of all, we will use that power for only good. We will not accept anything at face value. We will ask questions, and we will demand truth. So here I stand. I'm not standing here as valedictorian by myself. I was molded by my environment, by all my peers who are sitting here behind me. I couldn't have accomplished this without all of you. It was all of you who truly made me the person I am today. It was all of you who were my competition, yet my backbone. In that way, we are all valedictorians. I am now supposed to say farewell to this institution, those who maintain it, and those who stand with me and behind me, but I hope this farewell is more of a see you later, when we are all working together to rear a pedagogic movement. But first, let's go get those pieces of paper that tell us that we're smart enough to do so.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
The Astro installation men are at it again. Job done for the crew of the Space Shuttle Endeavour, accomplishing their number one objective, installing the $2 billion cosmic ray detector on the International Space Station, 225 miles above the Earth. The excitingly named piece of kit will scan the invisible universe for years to come, searching for antimatter and dark matter, with researchers hoping the findings will help explain how the cosmos originated. Endeavour Commander Mark Kelly has other things on his mind as well. Since he's been in space, his wife, Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, undergoing surgery on her skull after an assassination attempt.
Well, I had the chance at the end of the day to call her mom and her chief of staff and my brother periodically through as the surgery was going on, and she's doing really well. Everything went as planned. Her neurosurgeons are very happy. She's recuperating, and she's actually getting back to therapy today. So it went really, really well.
Just one shuttle mission left after this one, when Atlantis wraps up the program in July.
Now, go find the others.com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.